You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 347 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Night Terrors Black Adam number 2, Night Terrors Joker number 2, Night Terrors number 3, Night Terrors Shazam number 2, Night Terrors number 4, Night Terrors Detective Comics number 2, Night Terrors Night's End number 1, and Titans season 4 episode 8, Dick and Carol and Ted and Corey. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus. What I have for DC News tonight, a huge lineup of DC movies has recently appeared on Prime Video without any prior announcement. Nearly 20 DC movies have been added to Prime Video's lineup at the start of September, and this list includes The Batman, Batman 1989, Batman Returns, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, Joker, Watchmen, Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman 1984, Aquaman, Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, Justice League, Black Adam, Constantine, DC League of Super Pets, V for Vendetta, Shazam, and Catwoman.
That's a lot of films, Drew. And I think this is noteworthy to mention just because what we're dealing with streaming, all streaming services right now, where they're pulling stuff off for whatever reasons they want to give or speculation, but what the reality is stuff isn't staying on streaming platforms the way that I think a lot of people thought it would. So if there's a movie that's on that list that you've been wanting to watch, I would recommend watching it, because I don't know. I just feel like you can't know for sure that it's gonna be there in a month or two.
Yeah, I thought the DC stuff was gonna be exclusive on Max, and I was surprised to see that all these movies went to Prime Video. Sounds like Warner's did some sort of deal with Amazon. I'm guessing they're trying to get more money.
Shocking.
Well, I guess it makes sense that you'd want to get more money by spreading your stuff through streaming services, because nothing new's going to be coming out soon.
Exactly. Plus, I mean, pursuit of the dollar has clearly been, I mean, for many, many things, but it's clearly been the really only true focus that we've seen out of current management. So, yeah, like I said, there's a lot of movies on that list, some good ones. And I'm last I knew, some of those were also on Max, but there was one that catches your interest. I would watch it. That's what I would do.
Yeah, especially if you don't have Max and you have Prime. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Gina Schock from the Go-Go's, fabulous drummer of the Go-Go's.
Hi, this is Tony Levin of King Crimson.
Hi, this is David Fischoff of the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp.
Hi, this is Richard Evans. I am the author of Listening to the Music the Machines Make.
Hi, this is Teresa Kariakis, punk rock photographer.
Hi, I'm Tom Bojour, author of Nothing But a Good Time, and you are listening to Modern Musicology.
Modern Musicology.
Modern Musicology.
You're listening to Modern Musicology, so, you know, pay attention, you might learn something.
Good afternoon.
May we be of assistance, sir?
Yes, I'm looking for a podcast for someone who likes that 1960s headache music.
Don't these podcasters have atrocious taste?
Sir, may I recommend this podcast by Monkeying Around? I guarantee a migraine.
I never heard of Monkeying Around.
You never heard of Monkeying Around?
He's never heard of Monkeying Around.
What does Monkeying Around sound like? I'll take it.
He took it?
He took it.
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Night Terrors, Black Adam number 2. The Nightmare Realm. Still inhabiting Batman's body, Deadman attempts to recruit Black Adam to help him stop insomnia. Deadman tells Black Adam he must break free of the Nightmare Realm. Before Deadman can explain further, he disappears. Black Adam is hit by lightning and transforms back to Teth Adam, without saying the magic word. When he tries to transform back, it doesn't work. Teth Adam and the cat continue to the top of the second tower. There, Black Adam finds another Egyptian god, Amit. Teth Adam says the word and transforms into Black Adam. Adam flies to the third tower to find the Rock of Eternity. Black Adam is hit once again by lightning without saying the magic word, and he is once again Teth Adam. The wizard appears, calling Teth Adam a failure and binding him in chains. The cat appears also. The wizard grows taller and transforms into a skeleton pharaoh. Teth Adam transforms into Black Adam and fights the skeleton pharaoh until he finally obliterates him. Black Adam wakes up in Khandaq, and the creature is wearing a version of his costume. To be continued in Night Terrors, Night's End.
So, as our listeners know, Drew and I cut out a lot of the second issues of these Night Terrors because we just could not stomach reading all of them for a second round. But we did keep a couple, either because we were interested in what they were doing with the character, either within that story or just what they're doing with that character in general. And then there was a couple that we really liked. This one was one both Drew and I were interested in what Black Adam was, like what DC is doing with Black Adam, because it's unclear, I would say, would be the best description. I don't think that these two issues really did really anything to clarify what's going on with him exactly. But I thought, Drew, it was a great example of what we saw, I think, also in the Shazam book, and what I suspect strongly we would have seen if we had read all the other part twos, which was, this absolutely was not continued.
I know! I was like, okay, you know, we're going to see what's going to happen. And you're right, it wasn't continued. I'm like, you know, nothing. We learned nothing further about Black Adam. It wasn't continued in Night Terrors, Night's End.
Not touched on in the slightest by the main story. And the same thing happens with the Shazam book. Again, nothing happens, Drew. And I have a very strong suspicion. And I mean, and really, I think almost all of them that we read all were like, hey, make sure you check out the finale because it's all going to matter. It's all going to wrap up. And I think the closest thing we got, Drew, is I think there's a panel that the Joker is present in the final issue. I think that's about as close as we get.
Yeah, I think you're right. Anything else you want to say about Black Adam?
I mean, this wasn't great. We weren't really... Again, we picked this one because we're hoping on the off chance that they try and give a little context to what's going on with Black Adam. I didn't think it did that at all, really. And then the story also is just completely unresolved. It's a little bit baffling to me that we've seen this multiple times, so I can only extrapolate that this happens in most of the books, and maybe that's wrong, but I don't think it is. That this is what the editorial team would let through. I'm not saying because the story is so bad, I can't believe they allowed it, but like the story is not concluded. This one isn't. The Shazam one is not concluded. The Joker one is at least mostly concluded, but not super satisfying ending. I don't know what they were thinking with this, Drew. I don't know if Josh Williamson overpromised and was like, oh yeah, bro, trust me, it's going to all connect, man. I got like, I'm threading in all the different stories. I got this. And then just under-delivered, which I would believe. But what's more likely is that they were like, yeah, just say it's going to wrap up, and it's going to be a big story, don't worry about it. And all the writers were like, oh, okay.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Night Terrors Joker number 2. The Gotham Credit Union is robbed by 3 individuals en masse. Batman shows up stating he was coming for a loan because batarangs are expensive. This Batman is the Joker dressed up in a Batman costume. Joanne wakes up from his bad dream with his wife, Lena, next to him in bed. His son, Albert, comes rushing into their bedroom, reminding them that he doesn't want to be late to practice. Albert is holding a Joker comic book in his hands and wearing a blue Free Punchline t-shirt. At Wayne Enterprises, Joanne is interviewing Dr. Freeze for a position in his department. Dr. Freeze wants a legitimate job and to lay low until Batman is taken care of. Joanne tells Dr. Freeze that HR told him not to make jokes anymore, something about boundary issues. That night, Joanne continues to have bad dreams about being Batman. Joanne wakes up and goes into the other room. Batman's dead body is still in the closet where he had hung it. Joanne is playing softball with Wayne Enterprises' team against LexCorp's team. When the second baseman calls Joanne the Batman for getting a hit, Joker chokes him to death. Lex argues with the ref, who happens to be Insomnia. Mr. Wayne invites Joanne over to his house for dinner. When Joanne arrives at Wayne Mansion, he is greeted by Master Wayne's indentured servant, Winchester. Joanne recognizes as the umpire from the softball game and his boss. He tells Joanne that Master Wayne is not home, but Master Wayne walks up behind the servant wearing a Hawaiian shirt and Joker's purple hat. Master Wayne states, "Of course I'm here, Windham." Mr. Wayne invites Joanne to sit at a ridiculously long dinner table while Winthrop brings out a lovely meal. Mr. Wayne is concerned that Joanne isn't being his normal jovial self that they hired so long ago. A man without a sense of humor is like Gotham City without the Batman. Joanne states that he thought Batman died, but people keep seeing him. Mr. Wayne replies that people would lose their minds if Batman ever died. Everything would be so boring. When his butler interrupts, Mr. Wayne corrects him, stating, "I'm speaking, Winifred." Mr. Wayne goes on to say that if Batman died, maybe that's what is wrong with you. The Batman died, and part of you died with him. You're obsessed with him, so you're broken now. Then Mr. Wayne states he's just kidding. We all know Batman is fine, so whatever seems wrong with you must simply be my imagination. The butler leans over and whispers into Joanne's ear, "You'll have to excuse him, sir. He has a shellfish allergy that makes him act erratically." Mr. Wayne tells Wilson to stop whispering about him. Suddenly, one of Joanne's employees goes, "Hey, boss, you were just telling us about the new expense reports, and then you just stared off into space for like 2 minutes like a nut job." Joanne gets mad and stabs him to death with a pencil. Mr. D shows up at the meeting and sends everyone home early because the building is being fumigated. Mr. D tells Joanne that HR warned him about this. Just remember that Bruce Wayne loves to play tricks on people. The important thing to remember is how much you love this job, and nothing has ever made you happier. When Joanne gets home, his son Albert has found Batman's dead body. Albert wants to know why Batman's dead body is in his closet. Joanne shoves it back in the closet and tells Gaggy he has a wild imagination. Joanne's son reminds him that his name is Albert. Joanne goes to the bar and prattles on about Batman being dead and there being a new fake Batman to the bartender. Joanne decides to prove that Batman is still alive and starts committing a bunch of crimes. The Joker Batman shows up and chaos ensues. Joker wakes up in a warehouse surrounded by villains such as Scarface and Blockbuster. He realizes it was all a dream. Joker rolls back over and goes back to sleep. The end.
I definitely enjoyed this two-part story, Drew. I thought it was an interesting way to look at a dream version of what Joker would do if Batman died. We've seen, obviously, versions of that story, but like doing it with dream logic I thought was really interesting. And one theme I thought was particularly interesting in this comic, Drew, is the writer never outright says it, but I got the strong impression in this issue that Insomnia was struggling significantly to maintain control over Joker's nightmare. And I found that to be a really fascinating aspect of the story. It felt like you kept seeing Insomnia trying to sort of right the ship, because he keeps popping up as different people, and it's like him directly. There's a lot of these other comics, it's like one of his henchmen or just the nightmare doing the work for himself. But this one, Insomnia is directly involved and is constantly trying to steer Joker back into the nightmare. And it, like, Joker's psyche keeps, resisting that and veering back to kind of snapping him out of it. And I found that dynamic really interesting. And I thought naively, Drew, that that might come into play somehow in the conclusion of the story. Because, I mean, Batman has definitely been involved with the story. It's like, okay, I could see Joker popping up and maybe some other people showing that they could resist the, you know, Insomnia's pull in an interesting, unexpected way. But again, no. I mean, this was totally unrecognized in the main story, which was fine. I enjoyed this. This was a good two-part story for me. Again, I wish that the main story had done something with it because, again, I like the conclusion of the story, Drew, but it's not really quite done, right? Like, it feels like there's something sort of left unsaid, and I guess you could argue that that's still, you know, what the story gives you is the ending, but I don't know. I just don't feel like... I'm not shocked, Drew, but they obviously did not take advantage of all of these tie-ins very well.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. They didn't really take advantage of that. I found it hilarious that when Insomnia was the butler, he kept calling him by a different name. I found that hilarious. And, you know, and then you have Bruce Wayne point out the fact that there's something wrong with the Joker because Batman died. And then Pan waves it off there at the end. And that the ridiculously long dining table reminded me of Batman 89 when Vicki Vale comes there for dinner. And how it was more exaggerated in this comic with him and Joker. I found that hilarious. I enjoyed this two-parter too, though I thought the ending didn't land too well. I mean, it's kind of wrapped up quickly, I thought.
Again, well, because I feel like it was expecting... I feel like all of these stories, Drew, were expected Williamson's story to be referencing them. That I don't think a bunch of different writers accidentally left their stories unfinished. You know what I mean? Like, that had to have been the directive they were given, which was don't fully wrap up the story. We're going to wrap it up in the main conclusion. And then they just didn't do that, Drew. And again, we didn't read all of the part twos, but we did read the main story all the way through, and it doesn't reference a damn thing.
No, you're right. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Night Terrors number 3. Deadman and Sandman are being attacked by Insomnia's Sleepless Nights. Robin, Damian Wayne joins the fight, and they escape in the Batplane. It doesn't take Damian long to realize that Deadman inhabits his father's body. Deadman connects with Insomnia's memories and learns that he slaughtered a survivor's therapy group because he can't forgive the Justice League. He even cut his own eyelids because he won't sleep until the Justice League pays. Thanks to Deadman's insight into Insomnia's memories, Damian deduces that the Nightmare Stone is hidden between the waking and the dreaming. Sandman has a formula that will put Deadman and Robin in a state between the waking and dreaming. Sandman must fight off the Sleepless Nights as Deadman and Damian try to travel to the Hollow. In the Hollow, the duo discover the House of Horror, where Deadman can feel the power of the Nightmare Stone. Deadman states it wants to be found. Deadman and Damian fight a dying Deadman lying on the ground. Deadman reaches into his chest and pulls out the Nightmare Stone. Returning to the world of the waking, Deadman reveals that they have the Nightmare Stone. They can use it to stop Insomnia. To be continued in The Horrible Truth About Insomnia. Williamson just can't say the next issue number, can he? He's got to have The Horrible Truth about Insomnia or The Death of Deadman or something like that. So you don't even know what issue it's supposed to be continued in.
I mean, do you expect me to be surprised by a poor Williamson decision, Drew?
No. In this issue, he goes on about wanting revenge on the Justice League, but honestly, I mean, we're not to that issue yet, but we don't really see him take revenge on the Justice League, sort of, but I don't know. We'll get into that more later, I guess.
Now, okay, Drew, can you... They sort of blend together. Do we get the actual backstory of his grudge in this one, or is it in the next issue?
I think it's in the next issue.
Okay, all right. I don't want to talk about it then, but so I'll save my rant for that.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next title. Night Terror Shazam number 2. Mary has been captured by an evil version of her brother Billy. The rest of the Shazam family has been burned to ashes, by the magical lightning of Shazam. As the lightning bolt charges towards Mary to burn her to ashes, she is reminded that this is a dream and thus her rules. Instead of turning to ash, Mary becomes Mary Marvel and breaks free of her bonds. Mary battles the evil nightmare captain with the wisdom of Minerva, letting him know that she is the dream police. Mary leaves her dream and goes into Darla's dream. Darla is being hunted by giants. Mary says the magic word, and Darla is transformed into her superhero persona. Mary and Darla battle the giants together. Next, Mary goes into Eugene's dream, where he is being bullied by peers at school. Mary says the magic word, and suddenly Eugene is in his superhero form. When Mary arrives in Pedro's dream, he is giving a presentation in class without his pants. Mary says the magic word, and Pedro is in his superhero suit. Finally, Mary invades Freddy's dream. He has a shrunken head. Mary says the magic word, and he is transformed into Captain Junior. Worried about her parents, Mary grabs her father from his nightmare and puts him in her mother's nightmare, where they battle against pirates together. Nightmare Captain attacks Mary from behind, claiming he is Insomnia and that this is his realm and his rules. Insomnia punches Mary through several different nightmare scenarios. Captain Nightmare grows huge and captures a small Mary Marvel in his hand. The rest of the Shazam family appears and frees Mary. They beat down Insomnia, who can't believe he doesn't have control over the Shazam family. Mary wakes up in the real world and checks to make sure everyone is okay. Mary realizes she is holding Captain Nightmare's torn cape and looks out the window. Captain Nightmare laughs at her and flies off into the night. To be continued in Night Terrors, Night's End. But we're sorely disappointed in that.
Yeah, not continued, just in case that wasn't clear.
Yes.
I didn't care for this. I don't think that's going to be a surprise. It was lame, I guess is the best way to put it, Drew. It just felt like the cheesiest, lamest way to have the hero saw, like, oh, I am cured, and now I'm going to go magically, like, Tinkerbell cure every other person. It was lame, Drew. I don't know how else to put it. And then it was a little confusing at the end. It was a little unclear if she was still actually, like, she had been tricked and that even that was still a dream. Or I think it was just at the end of the story, we've reached the point in the main story where the nightmares had become real. But it was a little unclear, especially because that story had been playing around with whether or not Mary was awake. The story ending with what I'm pretty sure is her actually awake, that being a little unclear, I didn't totally land with me.
Yeah, it didn't land with me either. The thing I wanted to say about this issue is what they were trying to show in this issue was the fact that Mary could take control of her dreams. Now, I don't know if you've ever done that before, Cletus, but I have. I've had dreams before where I've been able to take control of what's happening in the dream, even in a nightmare before. I've not always been able to do it, but I've been able to do it sometimes.
I get that, Drew, but it doesn't make what they did with the story interesting. I think you could do something interesting with that idea of taking control of the dream, but it really just turned into like a cameo, you know what I mean? It was just like a montage of, oh, you're cured and you're cured and you're cured. It was unclear why she was able to drift over into other people's dreams.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not saying that this is a great issue. I'm just saying I understand what they are trying to do. I think their main purpose is just showing Mary was able to take control of her nightmare. Kind of like what we saw Joker doing.
Was interesting, though, because I don't know that he was necessarily... The thing that interested me with Joker is I don't know that he was taking control of his dream so much as is his own, like, psychosis was pushing back at the nightmare. Like, it was like his subconscious was pulling him out of the dream rather than him actively doing it like Mary is.
Right, I agree with you on that. I don't think the Joker was actively doing it, but he was doing it subconsciously. And, you know...
That made it more interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was definitely a better two-part issue than this one was. Yeah, I guess...
I didn't mind the first issue of this. I thought the first issue had played around with the sort of dream logic really well. And there was stuff I liked quite a bit, Drew, in the first issue of this. So the second one just was... very safe. It was just, it just felt like the safest possible way you could have ended the story.
Now, the way this one ended, I thought we were going to get something in the Night's End story with Mary and Insomnia. Yeah.
Yes, agreed.
It wasn't nope. there.
Nope. This is what I'm saying, Drew. I am convinced that this was a directive given to all of these writers. I don't think that these writers are accidentally leaving their stories unfinished or leaving these hooks in that are like, hey, you want to see the true conclusion of this? Check this story out. I'm sure that, I mean, that's what all of these events normally are designed to do anyway, right? Is to generate continued interest in the main story and fill out the story, kind of the side stories. But I don't know what happened, Drew, if they just thought that no one would care. Like, why would you burn your audience this way, Drew? This is like the worst example I've seen of short-term gains in exchange for long-term distrust of the company. Like, people who went out and actually bought these books and were like, oh, okay, I want to see the conclusion of this, and then they don't get that. And you really think they're going to turn around and buy the next one? Some of them, sure, yeah. But you're not all of them, right? Diminishing returns. And these already, in my opinion, create diminishing returns. And then you turning around and doing this with all these books is not going to generate goodwill with your customer base.
Right. And the fact that we dropped some of these titles, if you remember Dark Knight's Metal, we went through all of them. We couldn't even get through this freaking event.
No.
I mean, it's just, ugh. All right. Let's move on to the next title. Night Terrors number 4, Arkham Tower. Deadman, Robin, and Sandman are searching for Insomnia's real body, which is still trapped inside his cell. Deadman states that the Nightmare Stone wants Deadman to purge the powers from Insomnia's body and free everyone from his control. As they are climbing the stairs of Arkham Tower, Damian falls asleep briefly. Insomnia tries to trick Damian by impersonating his father. Damian doesn't fall for it. When they finally make it to Insomnia's room, Deadman explains that Christopher Lucas was a killer who refused to sleep, so the press called him Insomnia. Deadman uses the Nightmare Stone to free Insomnia's mind from the Lazarus Curse. Deadman goes into Christopher's memories to discover that his family perished in collateral damage while the Justice League was battling evil Batman from Dark Metal. Batman wakes up, surprised to find himself in Arkham Tower. Damian explains that they lost. Deadman thought he could use the stone to stop Insomnia's powers and wake everyone up. That is exactly what Insomnia wanted, because in doing so, the nightmares were made real, all of them. To be concluded in Night Terrors, Night's End. So, this is the issue we got the origin story of Insomnia.
And do we get, like, his tragic backstory in this one? I can't remember what.
Yes, we got his tragic backstory in this. Because
I'm putting heavy quotes around that.
Yes,
which is... Our audience can't see it, but...
It's because it was lame. I mean...
Oh, God, Drew, yes. Yes.
He's blaming the Justice 100%. League for the death of his family because it was collateral damage. But it was so over the top about it. It was just... It was stupid.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Drew. I'm so glad I'm not shocked that we're on the same page on this, but we are on this exactly. This was the dumbest, most cliched villain backstory you could possibly come up with. Like, oh, I'm mad at the Justice League because my family died and they weren't there, is the most basic, cliche backstory. We have seen this countless times. And that's the backstory you pick for your big new villain, Williamson? Of course it is. Of course it is. I honestly, Drew, I would like to thank Williamson because I feel like this Insomnia character is the perfect, like, chestnut for me to take and frame. And when people ask why I don't like him as a writer, I can just show them this.
A perfect example right there.
It's the perfect example, Drew. He is so overwrought, overdramatic, all of that. And the backstory is he's sad because the Justice League wasn't there when his family died. My God. I was dumbfounded in the best possible way. I was like, you did it. You did it. You picked the stupidest possible thing you could for this villain. I'm so proud of you, Williamson. Holy, Drew, man, I am in awe of this man's writing decisions. It's just unbelievable.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Night Terrors Detective Comics number 2. Jim Gordon reads the confession of Angelica Vanderbar, the woman who puked up diamonds. Jim learns that a masked woman came to her and Mortimer Blake with a clock that could contact otherworldly forces from the fifth dimension. The woman needed Angelica and Mortimer to help her with a ritual which could call forth these forces, the Pentapriest. Jim had stumbled upon the ritual after chasing after the boy he had sworn to protect, Sorrow. Sorrow was killed by Mortimer Blank when the Pentapriest transformed him into a bat-like creature. Jim was also transformed with his body becoming like glass. Jim hunts down the bat creature and tries to arrest him. The bat creature laughs at Jim, telling him he's becoming too powerful and is growing all the time. Jim tells the bat creature that he knows he is really Blake. Jim tells Blake that he brought his wife and kids in his car to try to convince him to change his ways. When Blake goes to check out the car he blasted, Jim tries to blow him up with an explosive. The explosion also shatters the side of Jim Gordon's head. Blake goes unconscious and Jim calls out the Pentapriest. Jim learns from the Pentapriest that the other woman that asked for a gift was part of him. This is why he was also granted the gift. Jim realizes the other woman is Barbara. When Jim finds Babs at the clock tower, she has slipped and cracked in half at the waist. Jim demands that the Pentapriest fix Babs. Babs' intention was to gain knowledge because Batman and Jim Gordon weren't going to be around much longer to save Gotham from the monsters. Babs throws the clock at the Pentapriest and she shatters. The Pentapriest decide it is time for Jim Gordon to wake up as they decide that they tire of being under the Nightmare Architect's eyes. They hail from a place of limitless power that in Jim's reality is called imagination. Jim wakes up in his bed. He is not made of glass and it is not snowing in Gotham. And Sorrow is not murdered but sleeps deeply in the other room. At the clock store, a man finds the timepiece he is looking for and asks the guy to name his price. The store manager looks at the clock strangely, stating it is odd because he knows every piece in his collection. End.
This was fantastic. And this was like the Joker. This was the other one that we really enjoyed the first issue of, Drew. And this was a really good conclusion. And I thought, to me, Drew, it was the most satisfying conclusion because it was the one that relied least on getting followed up by the main story. It was the least, I thought, attached to the main story also, which I thought served it well. Now, to be clear, it does leave it open for further exploration, but within the Detective Comics story, which I think all of us would prefer, this was excellent, Drew. And I loved that idea that they were, like, these Pentapriests didn't exist prior to the Nightmare, but that the Nightmare is, like, essentially because they existed in the Nightmare, they now existed in setting up their sort of reappearance in the, quote, real world. That's a super cool idea, Drew, and I'm very excited to see that followed up on.
I know. I found this an interesting story, too. And honestly, it didn't feel like it was connected to the Night Terrors, but it wasn't really connected to the Night Terrors story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could have this story all on its own, not having anything to do with the Night Terrors.
If this had been the backup story in Detective Comics, it would have fit right in with what we had already been reading. I wouldn't have blinked an eye, Drew.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. I mean, it would have fit right in. You know, especially with the story they've been telling already. It just would have fit. You didn't even need to have a Night Terrors label on it.
Agreed. I highly recommend people check this one out because it's really good, first off. And then you're going to see more of this story in some fashion, probably within the backup whenever they revisit Jim Gordon. But I'm excited when that happens. And this was, I thought, the best of all of the Night Terror tie-ins. This was, I thought, the best one. Joker being second place, but really, really good. Just a great comic.
Yeah, I'm glad we finished this one. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Night Terrors, Night's End, number 1. Insomnia has the Nightmare Stone. In exchange for bringing him the Nightmare Stone, Insomnia gives Deadman his own Deadman family. The superheroes show up to battle Insomnia. Insomnia creates nightmare versions of the Justice League for them to battle. The Sandman snaps Deadman out of his Deadman's family dream. Deadman battles against Insomnia. Insomnia rips Deadman in half, destroying him. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, and the Sandman go to John Dee's body in the Hall of Justice. Batman finds the Dream Stone and determines that it can be used to counter the Nightmare Stone. The Sandman states he can do it. Deadman reappears, stating he faked his death. Deadman takes the Nightmare Stone from Insomnia, stating that he's going to make the sacrifice to control it. Deadman and the Nightmare Stone disappear. Insomnia returns home happy to see his family, until he realizes they are zombies that want to eat him. Back at the Hall of Justice, Superman checks with Aquaman to learn the rest of the world is safe and secure. Batman, Robin, Zatanna, and Detective Chimp take Sandman back to his grave, where Zatanna uses magic to have him rest in peace. Batman falls over because Deadman possessed him for too long, and he's in a deep sleep. Amanda Waller consults with her secret council, telling them that Insomnia gave them a gift. The public see the superheroes as dangerous. Plus, they have found the Helmet of Hate on Lazarus Island. They have possession of the Nightmare Stone. These, Amanda gives to the new Dr. Hate. To be continued in Beast World in November 2023. I don't know about you, Cletus, but I'm excited there's going to be another event in November. I hated this freaking issue.
It was terrible. I mean, this whole event was terrible.
Dr. Hate, come on.
Oh, God. I know. And what another gem to preserve for classic Williamson, taking something that doesn't need it and putting his own clear Williamson touch on it. So that, again, Drew, I want to be very clear that, like, I know that people create new characters in comics all the time. And it's part of what makes comics what they are. I get that. But I've never, ever read a person who I have felt so transparently was creating characters with the hope that they're getting royalty kickbacks on that character later. And again, I could be wrong, but it comes across so strongly to me when I read Williamson stuff that I feel like he's writing to create a legacy for himself, not to create the actual best story that could be told.
I got to the end of this issue and it's like, I see it. It's Williamson is the architect behind these events that keep going on and on and on and on.
As long as DC keeps giving him the keys to the kingdom, Drew, this is what's going to keep happening. Because this is what Williamson does. Let's think, when we were reading The Flash with him consistently, this is what he did on The Flash. It kept jumping to his version of a self-contained event within The Flash every time, right? Everything was like the big, new, colossal thing that had to be dealt with. And we never really had grounded Flash stories.
That's very true. That's one of the reasons why we dropped the title. Got tired of it.
Yeah, well, but again, as long as DC continues to be okay with Williamson being the guy, and by all indications, Drew, they continue to be okay with it, this is what we're going to get. We're going to get stuff that the two of us clearly are not his target audience. I'm very genuinely happy for the people who are, because they're feasting right now, and I am very happy for them. For, I think, a lot of other people who aren't, though, this is tough. This was a terrible event, and like you said, it's leading into one of the dumbest ideas for a character and story I've ever seen. The Helm of Hate, Dr. Hate, are you serious? I have nothing positive to say about that, Drew. There's no positive thing to talk about there. And just to go back to the conclusion of this, you mentioned earlier you didn't feel that Insomnia enacted his revenge, and I think that has merit, Drew, and you could argue how effective it really was. But he does, as far as Williamson is concerned, Drew, he does. The way Williamson tries to show this is that it doesn't really matter if Insomnia actually wins. Now, I want to be very clear that Williamson does not do a good job of executing this, but what he's clearly trying to go for is that it doesn't matter if Insomnia actually wins. He wins regardless, by making the general public lose their faith in the Justice League, which is what happens. So in his mind, in Williamson's mind, Insomnia does sort of, in a sense, win, because the public has these nightmares all centered around the Justice League being evil, and they all wake up and they decide, hey, you know what? I don't like the Justice League anymore. Little Sally's going to take down her poster of the Justice League because she had a bad dream, and maybe they are bad. Now, is that a believable reason? Is that a reason that makes sense? Is that something that is a satisfying story? No. No to all of them. It's terrible. But that is what Williamson's trying to accomplish.
Little Sally might be afraid of the superheroes, but the whole world wouldn't be.
Little Sally's parents were encouraging it. Like, hey, actually, you know what? Little Sally's onto something here.
And that wasn't the only problem I had with this issue. Williamson sets up, they find this other stone that was supposed to counteract against the Nightmare Stone. The Dream Stone. He didn't even do anything with it. What was the point of finding this Dream Stone to counter the Nightmare Stone
when Dead Man comes back? Zombifying Sandman? I mean, yeah.
Ugh. And then, you know, he tells that he gets this Dream Stone. This is going to counteract the Nightmare Stone. Doesn't do anything with it. We have the Dead Man dies, but he didn't really die. He comes back, but then he sacrifices himself, which, I don't know, it was just stupid.
I want to emphasize a point that I made last podcast. Dead Man's sacrifice, Drew, just means nothing to me. I mean, it would help a lot if the story was actually good and I was invested in it. I will admit that. But, like, Dead Man's not... There's a reason, Drew, why no one... It's never occurred to anybody to make Dead Man the emotional center of a story where he sacrifices himself. Right? He's already dead. I can't emphasize this enough. It's in his name. He's already dead. The stakes just aren't there. They will never be there. I'm sure that there's a writer out there that could make me care a whole lot about Dead Man going into the true afterlife, Drew. I know it could happen. Don't get me wrong. But, like, if you're trying to make him the heroic sacrifice of the story, am I alone in this, Drew? Like, I just don't... He's already dead. It's not as effective as literally any living character.
Williamson also takes the time to have Batman tell us Dead Man will be back when we need him. So you know, what was the point of that sacrifice with Batman giving us that line? Dead Man will be back when we need him?
Well, I mean, you know, just in case you forget how comics work or how Williamson can't leave anything alone, just blech. It's so I'm so frustrated with the current state of ongoing DC books, Drew, not because of a lot of the writers I think are doing good stuff, but the keys to the kingdom are in Williamson's lap right now, Drew, and I personally just can't stand his writing, and it's just I don't know that it's possible for me to like what they're doing as long as he's the one in charge.
I totally agree with you. I feel the same way. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Titans.
Hi, this is Jim Adams from Monster Attack, inviting you to join us every Monday night at 5 o'clock for an all-new episode of Monster Attack. For the last 7 years, we've been talking about these wonderful movies that we grew up with as monster kids. So join us every Monday at 5 p.m. right here on the ESO Network.
Soul Forge Podcast. It's a geeky look at love, life, fandom, mental health, pop culture, and so much more. If you're into learning about yourself and the universe, Soul Forge is your podcast. Each week, we have a surprising new topic. From stupid things we do for love to product reviews, and there's almost always a fun guest host. Like and subscribe to Soul Forge Podcast today.
And we're back. Let's talk Titans, Season 4, Episode 8, Dick and Carol and Ted and Corey. Dick and Corey wake up in bed together wearing matching blue pajamas. They deduce they were drugged. Mother Mayhem introduces Brother Blood to the followers of Call's Folly, who have protected the Horn of Trigon. Brother Blood pulls the Horn of Trigon from lava, and the followers cheer. Next, Mother Mayhem tells the followers that something must be done about Raven, who claims to be the daughter of Trigon. The crowd shouts, "Kill the Heterick!" Dick and Corey realize that someone has put a life together for them as Ted and Carol. Brother Blood tells Mother Mayhem he is not leaving Call's Folly until he's killed Raven himself. When Brother Blood cuts Raven's arm with his knife, it also leaves a cut in his own arm. Raven warns him that if he kills her, she is taking him with her. Mother Mayhem tells the sheriff to kill Raven. Mother Mayhem and Brother Blood leave Call's Folly. Dick and Corey return to the diner looking for Rachel and learn that she is the Hederick. The waitress secretly passes them a note to meet her in the back of the diner to discuss Rachel. Jacob and the waitress, named Megan, inform Dick and Corey they are deaf. The music that is playing will cause Dick and Corey to forget who they are because of a device that's been implanted behind their ears. Bernard is able to track Starfire's geomagnetic pulse to Call's Folly, a mining town that burned down 10 years ago. They locate a radio station that seems untouched by the fire. Behind it, Tim and Bernard discover a teenager named William playing a radio who states he is waiting for his dad. He comes out here every day because he can feel his dad and sister. Dick and Corey use a trick that Bruce taught Dick to help him remember who they are against the mind control. It doesn't work for Corey, but Dick still remembers who he is. Dick sees Raven's flying and figures out where Raven is being held. Dick battles Sheriff Carter and his cohorts as he is able to free Raven. Jacob shows up at the church and warns Dick and Raven that the armory has been opened and the whole town is coming after them. Bernard theorizes that the others could be in a different dimension. He plans to send in a signal. William plays a song that his dad hears in his head. Jacob knows William is out there. Dick and Rachel show up at the radio station. They discover that the station is being powered by blood. Dick shuts it down. Bernard and Tim see the town materialize. Jacob and Megan are reunited with William, and the Titans are reunited, except for Gar and Connor, who no one's heard from. Metropolis. Brother Blood receives a drink from Connor, who wants to toast the future.
Drew, I really liked the concept of Call's Folly, and I mentioned that I thought the ball got rolling well by the end of last episode. And that continued into the start of this episode, but I would argue for me personally, this episode had the opposite path that the last one did. I enjoyed it less by the end. The escape from Call's Folly was, for me personally, not satisfying because it was very guilty of tropes that I personally, Drew, I'm exhausted of. There's no reason for Raven to be alive by the time Dick gets to where she is. She's been captured for hours, Drew.
That is true.
There's literally no reason. And right when Dick actually gets there, that's when, frankly, inexplicably, that's when they decide that they're going to kill her, which I was pleasantly... I liked earlier in the episode, Drew, when Brother Blood is like, no, I need to be the one to kill her, and he goes in and just does it. Right? There's no monologuing, no hesitation. He just goes up and slices her wrist, right? Now, we learn why, ultimately, that's not going to be effective. And that really worked for me, Drew. Because I was like, oh, this isn't bluster. It's not a trick. He's just acting on what he says he's going to do. It's a villain saying, I'm going to do this, and he just goes and does it. That was refreshing. And then immediately following that, his mother is like, you guys got to kill her. And they're like, we got it. And then they don't.
Now, I got a question about that, because if Brother Blood cut her and it cuts him, even if somebody else cut her, wouldn't that cut Brother Blood too? I didn't understand that. And I didn't understand why killing her by somebody else wouldn't kill Brother Blood also, because it felt like they were connected for some reason.
I think that's a fair confusion, Drew, and I'm not saying that I'm right. But my interpretation was that it only hurt her if he was doing it. That there were somehow their direct ties caused that magic to be happening, but that if it was someone else, that didn't apply.
Okay. That didn't make sense to me, and that would have been a perfect reason why they wouldn't want to kill Rachel if it was gonna hurt Brother Blood.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. She should have been dead. I enjoyed this second half. One of the things I thought was ridiculous, you know how I said Dick should have been able to take out those three, the sheriff and those two deputies last time?
Yeah.
In the church battle scene, he's surrounded by tons more deputies and able
with guts,
able...
to be clear. So he lost when it was just batons and then a taser at the end, but he was already losing to the batons. And then you go and you triple the number of cops and you give them guns, and now he wins handily, Drew. I talked about the tropes that bothered me, where a character is inexplicably left alive, and there's really no, like, you're not giving me a good reason for that character to be alive. And then you have a character survive an encounter that shouldn't be survivable based on what you've shown. Now, again, I can totally accept Dick kicking 9 cops' butts and winning, Drew. I don't have a hard time believing that. The only reason, like you mentioned, that makes it hard to believe is because you just showed me him losing to fewer of them. You just showed me that he couldn't beat 3 of them. And now you're asking me to believe that he can beat 9 of them with guns? You can't have your cake and eat it too. It's got to be one or the other.
I agree with you. Now, I didn't have any problem with him taking out the 9, because that should have been, he should have been able to take out the 3 and the 9. I believe that. That's Nightwing is skilled like that. So I didn't have any problem with that. I enjoyed this episode, and I know that there were some issues with it, but I really liked how they had Dick and Corey, the mind control thing. Because Dick was trained by Batman, I could understand him being able to battle against the mind control better than Corey. And I also thought it was interesting that even though Corey did what Dick told her to, it was actually Dick's recording that brought her out of it. That was interesting. I liked how we had Bernard and Tim in the radio station.
Yeah.
Dick and Rachel in the radio station at the same time. Because they were in different dimensions, they didn't come across each other. And then, you know, Bernard and Tim couldn't see the dude hooked up with the blood running through him because he wasn't in their dimension. I kind of liked how that worked, and how with, Dick destroying his connection, the blood's connection to the radio station on his side, how the town materialized and stuff. I thought that was cool.
I agree. Again, I really liked the concept of the town, and I liked, like you mentioned, the brainwashing. That was really cool. The cliches of plot armor, essentially, I really don't enjoy. So it made it hard for me to enjoy the escape from Call's Folly, Drew. But everything else around the episode, I enjoyed. I liked the teaser at the end with what's potentially going on with Superboy. Probably not actually joining forces, but doing whatever his own, you know, attempt at taking them down is. There's a lot to like in the episode still, but the plot armor problems were, I thought, pretty egregious, more so than they usually are. The show is usually not that bad about it, because they've been pretty willing to have characters die or characters get severely injured, Drew. So it was disappointing to see the show not do that. Again, it's not that I'm sitting here being like, oh boy, I hope Raven gets killed. But, like, you can write the show in a way where it's not unbelievable that she's still there, right? Like, have her just have been brought there. Anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But overall, I enjoyed it.
It's not CW, so it's a masterpiece in that regard.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, I wanted to shout out the season finale of My Adventures of Superman aired last week. An excellent first season. I am very excited to get more of that show. My only real major complaint with the season, Drew, is that it was too short. I would have liked a lot more story, but they were only given 10 episodes, and I thought they did a lot with the episodes that they had. Really good. I know both of us have sung our praises with the show, but the season is wrapped up. If you're somebody that likes to wait for the whole thing to air first, it's done. It's really good. I thought start to finish, it's a really strong first season. Has me very excited for hopefully many more seasons to come.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. So, and you said it was 10 episodes? I thought it was 11.
I am pretty sure it's 10, unless my count is off. I for sure have watched the finale, though.
I've watched the finale too, and I could totally be wrong. But I enjoyed it too. So I'm excited about next season. I don't know when it's going to be out. I don't know. Is it affected by the writer's strike?
I can't imagine it's not.
Yeah, unless, I can't imagine it's not either.
Unless the season's already been written, it just needs to be animated. That would be the only way it'd be unaffected.
That's what I thought. And who knows, it could be written already. It takes longer to plan out those things. I could see them having writing done earlier on stuff like that, just because of the amount of time it takes.
But other problem is the strike isn't just the writers, though, it's the actors, too.
That's true. We don't have any voice actors.
I agree it is unlikely but possible that they've written the second season, there ain't no way they've recorded the second season already.
That's true. All right. And for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Star Trek Discovery because I started watching it again. Got away from it for a little bit there, but I started watching it again. And man, I really enjoyed, third season. Man, I'm confused what season I'm on now. But it's really good. We wrapped up the stuff that, because I found out Star Trek Strange New Worlds kind of spins out of that. And I'm excited to check out that show yet, which I've heard is really good. But I'm still on Discovery. So I know Discovery's actually, I'm on season 3 of Discovery. Because there's a season 4 that's out already. And there's supposed to be a season 5 that's supposed to be coming at some point. So I'm going to finish out, I think, Star Trek Discovery. And then I'm going to go back and watch Strange New Worlds. So I've got a bunch of Star Trek to watch. I'm excited about that.
Sweet.
All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-455-8411. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, no Night Terror stuff. We've got Justice Society of America, Adventures of Superman John Kent, Steelworks, Danger Street, World's Finest Teen Titans, Superman 2023 Annual, Batman White Knight Presents Generation Joker, Batman Superman World's Finest, Hawk Girl, and the Penguin. And of course, our next episode of Titans. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.